Dr. Karen McClard
and Dr. Julie Linderman.
And in today's podcast, we talk about over-the-counter medicine and the mysterious teenage brain.
Well said.
Yes.
Hope you enjoy.
Good morning, everyone.
Here we are once again.
So we have decided this time to just go completely freestyle.
Yes.
We have no agenda.
Yep.
We think it's a little bit more organic that way.
It is.
So,
unfortunately, we don't have any of it. Like, we don't have a video feed because I'm in a robe.
Yes.
And sweatpants.
Yes.
Karen has a lime green scrunchie and a hot pink hat on.
It's amazing. And I'm covered in dog hair because there were two dogs sitting in my lap while I was drinking coffee.
It's true.
And if you know me well, you would think that was really funny.
Yeah.
Okay. So, one of the things that cold and flu season has brought to my attention is over-the-counter medications are very confusing to parents and, you know, a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to just sort of do a brief flyover.
Yes.
On those. So I'm just going to jump in.
Go for it.
So when people ask me about cough and cold medicine, first of all, it depends on the age of the kid. And so for kids under the age of 2, you know, pretty much everything that you buy over the counter is going to say ask a doctor. And it may even be some products 6, right?
Absolutely.
And so for
most medicines that actually have like an active ingredient,
we'll say age 6. Okay.
As a minimum.
So, you know, Tylenol and ibuprofen are kind of mainstays. Tylenol, not until after age 2, first round of shots. I'm sorry. Oh, see, this is what happens when we freestyle. I see her roll her eyes. I'm like, what did I say? 2 months. So
right,
at 2 months, you can give Tylenol after your baby has had the first round of vaccines, but we never recommend Tylenol before the first round of vaccines because we would need to know if your baby was spiking a fever.
Right.
And then at 6 months, you can also do ibuprofen.
Right.
So ibuprofen lasts about 8 hours, where Tylenol is more like 4 to 6. So
right.
I like ibuprofen a lot better once they're old enough.
And I think ibuprofen actually is more effective.
Absolutely.
At fever reduction.
It is. And it's an anti-inflammatory.
Right.
So if your baby has, you know, some congestion and aches that he or she can't tell us about,
right,
it'll help that.
You should feel like it's a miracle drug.
Yes.
Right?
Ibuprofen is the best.
I agree.
And it's relatively safe in terms of side effect profile.
Right.
Occasionally it can cause a little bit of an upset stomach if you take it on an upset stomach. But for the most part, you know, Tylenol overdose can be very dangerous, but ibuprofen's pretty safe.
Right.
And then as they, you know, Benadryl is okay in the proper dose.
Right.
But there's not much else in terms of cough suppression.
Right.
You know, congestion treatment.
And the main reason is because it's just not effective.
Right.
And I think that's the most important thing, right? So it's not like we're keeping it because there's such a huge side effect profile, but the effectiveness, it just, those medicines aren't effective in a young age group. And there is more risk of toxicity than there is benefit of the medication, right?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so then let's say we have a school-age child with a cold.
Can I say one thing before we get there?
You can say a million things.
So in that age group where we can't give like a true cough suppressant and we don't want to just treat colds with antihistamines, you really want to maximize nasal saline and suctioning. You can do humidifiers, hot steamy showers. Just the goal is to keep secretions thin and mobile. And then honey actually has some real benefit as far as cough suppression. Yes.
Over the age of 1.
Over the age of 1. Perfect.
Yes.
And so before that, maybe like agave nectar. There actually, Zarbee's has, and you know, I don't really care about the brand Zarbee's necessarily, but they do have a cough suppressant for babies 2 months to 12 months that's an agave nectar and thyme. And it's not going to hurt, and it may just provide a little bit of like a coating, a soothing.
And you could maybe add it to your margarita if you had some left over.
You know,
after
we
your baby's one.
We should
put cough suppressant in margaritas. But for babies. A cough suppressant for babies.
Yes, the margarita for
us.
We
could have a pediatric line of margaritas for sad parents.
Because okay. Your baby is coughing and you're
if
up
your
all
baby's
night.
Coughing, have an agave nectar.
Okay, so I'm sorry to interrupt. So tell me about school-age children.
Oh, wait, but then I had another thought. Oh,
okay, go
but
ahead.
But I didn't interrupt you because I'm working on that. It's one of my 2020 goals to stop interrupting people. But I forgot what I was going to say. Okay, no, we're going to keep going. I'm going to go to school age, and then when I remember it, I'm going to come back.
That sounds great.
Oh, I know what it was.
Okay.
Okay, so yes, suctioning can be extremely helpful.
Yes.
With the caveat that over-suctioning can cause swelling.
Yes.
And when you're dealing with a teeny tiny airway, even just a little bit of swelling can make things worse.
You're right.
And sometimes what you're hearing isn't actually stuff you can go get.
Right.
When you hear your baby sounding really congested, it's either in a location that you couldn't possibly reach with a bulb syringe.
Right.
Or you just hear swelling.
Right.
And it's like a snorer.
Yeah.
Snorer?
Yes. Snorer.
Yes. Snoring. And so if that's the case, if your baby's not running a fever,
right,
and your baby is able to drink enough to stay hydrated,
yeah,
then like someone who is snoring, it's only bothering the person that has to listen to it.
Right.
So it's not bothering your baby. So don't feel like you have to have a completely silent baby to have a good night's sleep.
Got it.
Okay. School age kids.
Yes.
So when you are looking at the cough and cold medicine section, there's a couple of brand names that people use as a general name to describe a medicine.
Okay.
For example, Sudafed. So Sudafed is a brand name, but there are a million different kinds of Sudafed products that aren't actually the true Sudafedrine that they keep behind the counter.
Right.
So if you have an older kid, and we'll talk about that in a minute. I'm going to bounce that off you. Especially a kid, and I think it probably only comes in pills now that I'm thinking about it. Do they have liquid Sudafedrin?
I don't think so.
Okay. So then, because that would be easier to cook meth with, I guess.
Probably.
Right? Yeah. The pills are harder. So they keep it behind the counter. And so they come in little tiny red pills, and it's a single agent decongestant. And so typically, if you have a kid, how old, Jules?
I'd say 12.
12.
And above. Yeah.
12 and above. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if your child is over 12, and if you personally have a cold and you're older than 12, then Sudafed behind the counter you're going to get the most effectiveness in terms of a pill that helps you decongest.
Right.
The Sudafed products that are over there, they're going to have a combination of antihistamine, a less effective decongestant. Some of them have, what is it? See, I wanted to have them in front of me. But anyway, it's a combination.
Maybe like phenylalanine?
Maybe, yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, they'll have a decongestant, and then they will have, you know, a dusting of Advil or Tylenol.
Right.
Except in the generic form. So a dusting of acetaminophen or ibuprofen. But generally, it's not going to be enough to help you. And all of the multi-symptom cough and cold medicines, in my opinion, I don't ever recommend them for kids, teenagers, adults, because they have a little bit of everything as opposed to a complete dose of what you need. So
totally agree.
And it's very easy if you're taking, say, Mucinex is another one that people often will say, oh, I gave my kid Mucinex.
Right.
I'm like, well, what Mucinex?
Because right.
Mucinex, I think, is the brand name that we use for a mucolytic, and I can never...
Guaifenesin.
Guaifenesin.
Yes.
Which I personally have never had a lot of
I never take
with.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I don't even ever recommend it. I don't think it's dangerous, per
no.
se, but,
right.
you know...
Especially as a single agent, like you're saying.
Yes, if it's a single agent. But then Mucinex as a brand can have a combination of the mucolytic and antihistamine, cough suppressant, Tylenol, Advil, and
yeah.
so when you get into those, and then it's not even a good dose. It's like 325 milligrams of acetaminophen,
right.
which is what you would give, you know, a kindergartner.
Right.
And so if you're an adult and you're taking that, and then you're like, well, now I'm going to take more Tylenol.
Right.
You may not even recognize that there's Tylenol in the Mucinex, and then it
exactly.
could be, it could not be great.
I think that's a really good point. You know, if you can just do single agent, and then you can, you know, figure out how to do those things together.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, if your main issue is body aches and fever, then you're addressing that with Advil.
Right.
Or with ibuprofen. Then if you, you know, have a bunch of congestion, then you can think about, okay, now do I want to do something like a Sudafed? Do I just want to use something at the source, like maybe a Flonase or Afrin acutely for a couple days, mm-hmm. right? And then, you know, if it's that your cough is, I guess the thought behind Mucinex or guaifenesin is your cough is really dry and tight. So then the goal is to, you know, kind of break it up.
But then you probably need albuterol.
Right. So I mean, maybe Mucinex doesn't, I don't think it hurts, but I agree. I'm not really, yeah. If you look at the data in the pediatric population, it doesn't look like it does much. Yeah. So maybe in adults it does. And I'm sure there are people out there who feel like it makes a difference. But anyway.
The bottom line is if you pick a symptom and treat the specific symptom. So just like she said. And then if you have questions about the best over-the-counter medicine for whatever is the worst symptom, then if, you know, we've been confusing because we've listed 1,000 different things, then you can always talk to your doctor about the best single agent.
Well, that's always the smartest thing to do.
Yes. And just a disclaimer here, this isn't a substitute for medical advice, our podcast.
I know. We do need to probably have that at the beginning and the end.
So really, this is more generally
entertainment. And also maybe gives you a chance to kind of think about some of these things, kind of like how we think about them. One thing that parents ask me all the time, like, what would you give your kids if they have a terrible cold? And in all honesty, I think the only things that we ever do in our house is ibuprofen and Afrin for a few days. Mm-hmm. And then my son, because he has a history of allergies, will restart his Flonase and do that for a couple weeks, usually following nasal saline. So nasal saline, blow your nose, and then Flonase.
Right.
But I mean, all this, I don't think we own any. I don't think we have any of the
Sudafed.
And, you know, Sudafed I know
but
is helpful.
But Sudafedrin,
yes,
specifically.
Yes, the one behind the counter.
The one behind the counter.
I think that's great.
Okay.
Okay, let me, I do want to talk just real quick. So people ask all the time, like, about all of these things, like the sort of herbal remedies, right? So zinc, I know elderberry is a big
echinacea.
One. Echinacea. So, you know, I took just a couple minutes to read on a medical database about those, just because I've had a lot of questions this season. So in studies, does echinacea or zinc show any benefit in pediatrics in reduction of symptoms and or length of illness? And the data does not show any improvement compared to placebo. Now, in adults, there is some data that that zinc can shorten the duration of the illness. And I would imagine echinacea, elderberry, or
so
elderflower.
Elderberry syrup is a big
elderberry
because
syrup.
Some blog or somewhere it got published that it helps with.
And I don't
something.
Think in correct dosing it hurts. So mm-hmm. you know, like we talk about anything that sort of kind of revs up your immune system: vitamin C, echinacea, elderberry syrup, and probiotics. So maybe there's some benefit there in like protection and immune system function, but I think it's questionable for reasons you and I have discussed in the past, probably mainly just, is it a reputable vendor? How is the dosing? Is it actually consistent from dose to dose? And are there side effects? And probably the most important side effect in the pediatric population would be GI distress with any of those. And so just recognizing that could be an issue.
Yeah. And then elderberry isn't approved under one.
Oh, elderberry, I'm sure. Sorry. I wouldn't give any of that under one.
Yeah. I've been asked that and I say no.
I think that's smart.
Under age one.
Yeah.
So... Okay, the dog is snoring. I just want, if anyone is
yes,
being
if you
picked
hear that,
up
it's
on
not
the
us.
Mic, it's not us. And we're fine with it. Like
and
we
just
said,
kicked another dog out because
only,
he was breathing so heavy.
It only affects us. We don't need to saline and suction the dog.
It won't help.
It
it's
won't
the
help.
Way her face is built.
It's her face. Okay.
Okay, let's transition.
Okay, we can transition.
What do you want to talk about next?
So I have a 10-year-old daughter. I've talked about that. And what I am starting to recognize is that I am getting to experience, you know, pre-adolescence and eventually middle school for a second time through her.
Yes.
And so there are, you know, plenty of things that I would never want to do again in my life. And I think middle school is one of them.
Top three.
Top three for sure. And so I am now tasked with helping her navigate this new experience for her. And we've already talked about social media and Instagram. Yeah. And this is, doesn't even have to do with that. This has to do with relationships that are being formed and, you know, including people or not including people. Right. And right. And it's tough. And I think that when you're 10 or 12 or, you know, older at my age, sometimes you can have an experience that is seemingly the biggest tragedy that's ever happened to you.
Yes.
And as a parent, it's our job to help them through that. But also, we can't just belittle them and be like, oh my God, in the scheme of your life, this is not that big right. of a deal. Because to her, it is.
Yeah.
And then, but we also have to give them tools to help in the future, because it's going to keep happening. And
right.
this is like the cheesiest analogy, and I can just feel my children cringing as I'm going through this, but humor me.
Okay.
All right. So this is how I've started describing it to my tween girls when they come in. So think of like your life and your relationship with friends as a river.
Okay.
And so it's always moving. So right. you're not in a lake. It's never stopping. You just keep moving. And sometimes there are boulders in the way, and sometimes there's rapids, and sometimes you go down a waterfall. But it's always the bad spots always go behind you eventually.
Right, right.
And so the first time you hit a boulder, you're going to be knocked off your raft and you will recover. And then the next time you see it coming, maybe you know how to steer clear of it the next time because you know. And maybe you don't get all the way around it. And then as you know, as these new experiences keep happening, you make it through and then you can be prepared for the next one. And
right,
so
right.
you know, things that are universal, being left out at the lunch table, not right. being invited to a party.
Right.
Girls whispering, girls passing notes, and then as you get older and boys and so and so likes this boy, but you like this boy, and so she shouldn't like this boy, and it's very tough to navigate all that.
It is.
And so, and of course, as we've talked about social media before, now it's just all so much more in your face.
It is. It's there's a magnifying glass on it.
If you get left out, and so you can't protect your children from, you know, bullies. And now, of course, we want to teach our kids to not be bullies.
Right.
And to, you know, be inclusive and sort of be aware of your surroundings. I think a lot of things that happen, too, in terms of being left out or feeling left out is as much how you're perceiving it. Because the people
totally
that are over there talking, they may not even look around the room and say, oh, you know, no one's playing with Lucy. No.
They're probably not, because, you know, at that age, you can't help but be so self-focused.
Absolutely.
Right?
So
there's not necessarily malintent. But I will say some degree of being left out, being excluded, and not being bullied, but being, you know, where you feel like you weren't treated as well as you would have liked to have been, all of that is what creates empathy and compassion going forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then,
absolutely.
And I'm trying to have that discussion with my girls, like if they're upset about, you know, the way they were treated by somebody, well, I mean, remember that, like how important it is that you don't do that same thing, because it's really hard because they are so kind of self-focused.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they're suddenly included again, then, you know, they may feel like, I don't know, now everything's good for them. They don't have to worry about everybody else.
Right. And
so,
I think for you and I, we had boys first. And so,
yeah,
for me, this
it's
is like
different.
Uncharted territory with, you know, the girl. And I say uncharted territory, I did live it at least. And,
yeah.
and I remember what it was like to,
yes.
to sit at the lunch table and see two girls whispering and feeling left out.
Right.
And right. of course, my first thought was, oh, they're talking about me.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you know, I mean, they may have been, but it's just a whole new thing. And then now that I'm 40 and I look back on my female relationships, like, I think some of those women I'm still, or girls at the time, I'm good friends with still. And then you think about the girls maybe that are bullies.
Yeah.
That maybe as adults, they're not doing as well.
Yeah.
Because that's
for sure.
No one ever interventioned them or they didn't have the sort of parental structure that taught them that that wasn't appropriate.
Right, right.
So
it's true.
So that's my it's river analogy.
And you know, I've been listening actually to a podcast, or it's not a podcast, an Audible, right? A book called The Teenage Brain. Have you ever heard about this?
No, it's that they have no frontal lobe or something. I feel like they make terrible decisions, or they don't even make decisions. They just impulse.
Right.
And that's, did I just sum up the book?
You did. Yeah. I mean, I'm so impressed because it's like a 9-hour Audible.
Oh, there you go. I saved everyone 9 hours and $14.99 on Audible.
But what... But what I found, you know, listening to this, it's kind of like I'm going back through the anatomy of the brain. I mean, it's been really interesting, but because now we have 15-year-old boys.
Yes, we do.
I'm trying to just kind of get my hands around their decision-making and how I can potentially impact that. And you're right that, you know, they don't have impulse control like an adult, even though they look like adults. and they... act impulsively. They have obviously a sense of, immunity to error, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they truly think that they, you know, are resilient.
Yes.
And what's the word that I'm looking for?
They're
immortal.
Immortal. Gosh, yes.
Sorry.
I was thinking inconceivable, but that's because I love The Princess Bride.
Exactly.
So I'm like, that's not the right word. But
I mean, it's so sad when I just cannot find those words. Yeah. But anyway, I think the big thing is, you know, looking at, and it's so funny that you and I have our kids in this exact same order. So we've got the 15-year-olds over here who have impulsive action, are trying to be thoughtful and conscientious, but are making errors all over the place. And in this book, it talks a lot about how easy it is for parents to sort of make the judgment that, you know, my own child wouldn't do anything reckless and impulsive because, you know, that's just not their character. But I think the important thing is that they act out of character impulsively. Mm-hmm. And so even though we can't prevent that, and some exploration and risk is critical to being a teenager, that we need to be, again, in their face to a certain extent, here and there, making sure that they're doing okay, kind of just, you know, reiterating the parental things that we all say about being safe, being thoughtful, think twice, you know, don't act until you've at least thought through your worst case scenario, right?
Right.
And even though that may not prevent all errors, hopefully it prevents the catastrophic ones.
Right.
Because the more that you sort of have that discussion with your kids, the more that those memories of the discussion will come back to them in moments going forward. And that's really what this book is talking about, at least in the first 2 hours that I've listened to. Okay, and then our preteen girls, right, who at this point are probably pretty risk averse, I think.
Definitely.
I mean, they're afraid to do, like, you know, it's funny. I remember moving to Dallas and looking at pictures of like sports teams and stuff that were hanging up in like the donut shops and thinking, everybody looks exactly the same. And I don't necessarily mean ethnicity. I'm just saying like they all wear their hair the same way. They are, you know, there's this certain like conformity, and it drove me crazy. But at the same time, that age is about conformity,
yes,
right? And it's really hard to do anything that's different. And so I think what we're seeing with our girls is they're afraid to stand out in a lot of ways. They're afraid to rock the boat at all. They want to be just liked by everybody. They're really afraid of being left out, being judged, and somebody being mean to them. And they don't have like sort of the backbone yet to kind of be able to be who they are and not care about that as much. And so I guess just reiterating that to them all the time, that their uniqueness is what makes them so great.
And I have such a good example that was so surprising to me. So my dad loves $2 bills. He's giving them out all the time. So if anyone ever runs into my dad, you can always ask him for money. I do.
No, that's
so, but he gives $2 bills out. And so Lucy, they were having like a little shopping thing at school, you know, raising money. The third graders made necklaces and they were for sale. And so she asked for some money to go shop. So I gave her a couple of the $2 bills and she didn't want to take them because she was afraid that people would think that it was weird money.
Totally.
And so I never saw that coming. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm like, money is money. But that is how no one wants to be,
right?
You know, you just got to fit in, because that way you don't run the risk of people,
right?
You know, pointing and laughing and
that's true.
And then you know, you can do, no, Lucy, it's totally fine, I promise. But then at the same time, okay, well, if you don't want to take the money, then you can't then buy a necklace.
Yeah,
I mean, this is all I have. I only have $2 bills.
Right.
Or
right.
You can, you know, take.
That's a really good point.
12 quarters, I mean, or whatever.
To be supportive.
16 quarters.
Yeah. But also force
right.
that the challenge mm-hmm. is really maybe what parenting is all about.
Yeah.
You know?
And then as you're talking about the 15-year-old and making mistakes, I owe this catchphrase to Courtney Taylor. But one of my things I start is, it's totally fine to make mistakes. We expect you to. You're going to have some good mistakes that you learn a lot from. We just want to prevent you from making life-altering mistakes.
Oh, my God. Kevin and I have that conversation.
Yes.
Maybe every day.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin, we don't want you to make any life-altering mistakes, okay?
But you
better check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Definitely not with regards to Kevin.
No, I'm not.
But it's true.
Yeah,
I mean, it's funny. Like that, as you get into adolescence, like that is now where we are.
Yes.
Like, we know they're going to make mistakes, but I mean, I just don't want them to make catastrophic ones.
And
terrifies me.
And let me segue into phones just a little bit.
Yeah.
So I know that there is a huge movement, wait till 8th. And we may have even talked about this previously, but another thing that I have recognized is that if the younger that your child is when they start to have, and I'm going to say a phone, but I mean an iTouch or an iPad or anything that they can use to communicate with other people.
Uh-huh.
And not just, you know, play games on it, but to text people, FaceTime people, and then social media. But the younger they are, the more malleable they are, and they're more ready to listen to your guidance. And so if you wait until a kid is 14 years old to give them a phone, they don't care what you think. They know everything. You're an idiot. And they're not going to do. I mean, they've already
formed
their. And
they've
already done it.
So exposed already.
And they form their own opinions because of what other kids are doing. And so you really want to teach them to use a phone just like you would teach them to drive a car.
You know, I really could not agree more. And maybe this is because we're in pediatrics and we see so many kids, right? But, and I have a lot of parents in my practice who I think would disagree with this point.
Oh, same.
And we both do.
Actually, yeah. After I explain it that way about how an 11-year-old is willing to listen to you and a 14-year-old isn't, I haven't ever had anyone give me pushback on that.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, that's a really great way to describe it. And, you know, I to be totally honest with you, I'm not sure I engage around that much. If I have a parent who I know is adamant that they're not giving their kid a phone until this age, I kind of let it lie.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do. And so, and part of that's because of time restrictions.
Sure.
I think if I felt like we could really hash it out, I would address
right.
it. But, you know, I think there's really something to that. And I, just because of where we are and the time that we're in, I mean, kids that are 12, they are on phones constantly, even if they don't have one.
Yes.
They are on their friends' phones. They are, I mean, doing all sorts of stuff on there. And so, and I mean, I've seen that, right?
Yeah.
And so you're only controlling so much. And like you said, if it's in your own home and it's their device, you actually can put more control into
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Because you can monitor their screen time and all that kind of stuff.
And, you know, when they're younger, you don't actually know how you're going to experience them being a 14-year-old. And
right.
I think that, you know, the amount of independence that a 14 and 15-year-old kid has, when all of a sudden you give them a device, you're not going to be as involved.
Right.
And because they have independence and autonomy, and it's...
And they need to
and
have
they need it.
Independence and autonomy.
But when they're 12, you can read all their texts, and it's not weird.
Right.
And I mean, you can read all their texts when they're 14.
But it's dicey
but
to do that.
It's not... Exactly.
I know
and
that
so
we're supposed
but
to.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yes. And you know, it's funny. Like, we've had, you know, some things with my son and, you know, with dating and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, my
and,
God.
And,
gosh.
But I do not get on his phone and read. I ask him, like, well, what did you say to so-and-so? What did she say back to you, or what did he say back to you? And you know, he gives me, like, a synopsis. And does he leave out parts? Probably. But I mean, he's becoming a man.
Mm-hmm.
Just like we said,
yeah.
There's not a ton of impulse control and all that kind of stuff. But he deserves some degree of privacy.
Yeah, and I mean, we can prepare them, we can't protect them.
Yeah.
And that goes to that other proverb, you prepare your child for the path, don't prepare the path for the child.
And I really like that. One other thing I just want to say, because I'm still kind of thinking about this teenage brain book, is it's not like when you send them off to college, okay, now the frontal lobe, the frontal lobe is totally developed, mm-hmm. and now they're going to make good decisions.
We all hope.
We all hope, right? Okay, but it's not. I mean, the data actually shows we're talking about mid-20s.
25.
Yes, you're exactly right. And so even if you think, well, I'm going to be all up in their business in high school, I'm going to be checking their grades every day, I'm going to be checking their work, I'm going to be talking to their teachers, I'm going to be reading their texts, I'm going to be highly involved in their relationships, because then when they go to college, they're prepared. It's the opposite, right? They have to develop that and hopefully make mistakes, again, not catastrophic ones, now as freshmen and sophomores in high school, mm-hmm. or even, in eighth grade or whatever, so that then when they go to college, they have been independent, they've been somewhat autonomous, they've made some errors and they've grown through those errors, and now, hopefully, they can function
navigate
that next phase of life.
Yeah.
Because really, the teenage brain exists into early adulthood.
Well, and then just to, piggyback off of that, substance use, alcohol, marijuana, anything else, God forbid, if your brain isn't fully formed and you're smoking pot all the time at age, so it's legal at 21.
Right.
And so, in some states.
Yes.
And so, that's still a lot of maturing that has to be done. So then let's back it up to high school.
I know.
And you start drinking and doing pot in high school.
Right.
Is that what it's called? I think. If you start doing that stuff while your brain isn't, it's plastic.
It is.
It's not formed.
I know.
It could be bad.
It could.
I feel like I read an article that you lose IQ points.
You do. You do.
And then to piggyback off that, because this is how my brain works, vaping. I was hanging out with a couple boys last night. I mean, and the mother, teenage boys. The mother was there. And I asked them, so are people afraid of vaping now that all this stuff has come out? Die suddenly. And they're like, no, not at all.
And I wish they would just go back to cigarettes. I'm totally kidding.
What does it take to scare them? It's like Russian roulette from what I can understand.
I know, because it's so random.
Any pod of the liquid that goes in there could be dangerous.
Yeah,
and I know. So, but they don't care.
They don't care because they're immortal.
Yes, immortal. Invincible.
Inconceivable.
Inconceivable.
They are inconceivable.
It's inconceivable to them that they could get damaged permanently or, get really sick.
Absolutely.
I feel like kids are dying suddenly from vaping.
Kids are dying suddenly from a bunch of just stupid
stuff.
We're not going to use the other word.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So we're at the 30-minute mark. I could sit and chat with literally, I know I say it every time, but I could talk to you for 7 hours. But let's do next weekend. We can't next weekend because it's Valentine's Day and President's weekend.
Right.
And we're going to be out of town.
Yeah. That's okay.
Okay.
I approve.
The weekend after.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Sounds good.
You.
Okay.
Thanks for
everyone.
Listening.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us for another week of the Mommy MD podcast.